Melina,
Hello.
how lovely to talk to you. I am so happy to be talking to Melina Palmer on a great gloomy day in Seattle because I know this is going to cheer me up. Melina is founder and CEO of The Brainy Business. I mean, that name alone has to make you smile. And she's got the cutest graphics of little brains with glasses on them, which are just adorable. And she has just released a fantastic new book, which is called What Your Customer Wants and Can't Tell You. And we are totally going to dive into that. Melina is the person to go to for all thing related to behavioral economics. My favorite words, people and money. Melina, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Would you explain what behavioral economics actually is?
Yeah, it is essentially the psychology of why people buy. When we look at our own brains, we all have them, but we don't always understand how they work. And a lot of planning that we have, and when we think about what we want to do or what people should do is how we plan out our businesses and how traditional economic models were built. But as time has come to tell, people don't always do what they should do. We know we should eat right and exercise, but maybe we would rather sit on the couch and eat a bunch of Cheetos and watch Netflix, because that seems much more appealing. And that's what we end up doing instead. So, understanding the rules of the brain and how to better communicate with them is what I do and help people with as an applied behavioral economist.
You started off with a bachelor's degree in business admin, and then you worked, business administration marketing. Then you worked in corporate marketing and brand strategy. And I love marketing, it just makes me want to dance around the room. But then you went back and you earned your master's in behavioral economics. What caused you to make the switch?
I would say, so when I got my undergrad, there was just one piece of one course that had this little tiny bit about buying psychology. And I thought it was just the most amazing thing. And I spent the better part of 10 years looking for master's programs and things within that field. And every school I called said that didn't exist yet. It wasn't a thing. And so I just was, working and kind of watching the wings and was doing innovation programs and things while I was working. And in one of them, they happened to bring in some people from what's called the Center for Advanced Hindsight at Duke University, which is their behavioral economics wing. And they were talking about what they did. And I realized that is what I had spent 10 years looking for. And so I found myself a master's program and was able to jump in. I was pretty early, especially on the applied behavioral economics side, in finding what this was. And as I was in my master's program, realized all the things that were so obvious and natural to me about how you can apply this to marketing and communication, brand strategy, pricing, change management. Just nobody was talking about it yet, which is how I ended up launching my podcast, which led to my book and all those things.
The podcast is called The Brainy Business, Understanding the Psychology of Why People Buy. And it's got downloads from over 170 countries. And we're going to be talking about some of those episodes because they are a ton of fun. You teach applied behavioral economics as one of the other things that you do. You do many, much work in the subject. But through the Texas A&M Human Behavior Lab, does that mean that you're chasing people through mazes and down? What happens in a human behavior labs?
Yeah, the Human Behavior Lab is a space. It's actually at Texas A&M has the largest academic human behavior lab in the world, and we use a lot of different types of testing and software to be able to look at eye tracking. We can do EEG brain scanning, facial expression analysis, skin response, distance to screen, things that allow us to know what is happening in a person's brain and in their natural reactions to something on a level that they can't tell us what they think or like or want. So our bodies are much more telling than what we can physically explain as to why we liked an ad or why we think we wanted to click on a button or something like that. And so being able to look at all of these data points at one time, and it's many hundred per second that we're able to look at, allows us to be able to see, you know, if you were working on something for a website, let's say, and you just look at the amount of time on page, which is something a lot of people will do. You know, you say, oh man, we had this. And even if you got a little bit fancy and had a heat map and you said, well, people looked at this for a really long time, so that must mean that it's good. You know, we did a good job. People are looking at this for a long time. When you incorporate in the facial expression analysis and we can see that someone had a lot of brow furrow while they were looking at that, it means that they were confused and they didn't understand what was there. And that's actually a really bad experience. So sometimes you want less time on a particular item because you don't want them to be dwelling because it's confusing. And so if you aren't combining those pieces of data, it's not as valuable of information for a business and being able to make good decisions on.
Oh my gosh, that's just fascinating. It must be so interesting and so much fun.
Yeah.
And of course, it just reminds me of those. I mean, it would make a fascinating television series. It mm-hmm. really, imagining a drama based around it right now. I can see it being a Netflix hit.
I'm hoping for something like that. If you know the right person to help me pitch it to, let's do it.
Whoever's listening, if you know somebody at Netflix, please reach out because we can make a ton of money off this idea. I love what you said about advanced hindsight. I think that's what my therapist is trying to help me with. Would you tell me about your fabulous new book? I mean, what a great name. What Your Customer Wants and Can't Tell You. What can't they tell you and why? I realize that's a big question, but what motivated you to write the book?
Yeah, so what they can't tell you is based on the way the brain really works, in which the subconscious brain is really running the show and making 99% of the decisions that anyone makes in any given day or time. And so when we think we're communicating with the brain, we are liking to think that it's with that logical, rational piece. But really, it's more of this subconscious using rules of thumb to make choices. And you can think about it like a person riding an elephant. There's the logical rider. It knows where it wants to go. It has a plan. It can see out onto the horizon and it needs the elephant to get there. But because they don't speak the same language, you can't logic the elephant into going. If it gets distracted and wants to run in a different direction or it wants to stop and sit down, you can't pull or push that 6-ton animal. You're sort of at the mercy of what it wants to do. And so it's the same with the conscious and subconscious. They don't speak the same language, and you are very much at the whim of what the subconscious is focusing on if you don't know how to properly communicate with and motivate that subconscious elephant. And so when you have say you do a focus group and you ask people if they would be interested in buying your toothpaste or what would make them interested. And they say, oh, you know, I bet if it had baking soda in it, I would buy it. And you say, oh, great, we'll go add baking soda in. And then nobody buys it. It's not that they typically lied to you on purpose, but they just don't even understand the rules of the brain underneath that are impacting the choices that they make. And so what I found in years of the podcast and then in my teaching is often the questions that I would get from people became, you know, I hear you talk about it on the show. It makes so much sense. I totally get it. Love it. And I'm not really sure where to start. And the field of behavioral economics so far is very, very academic. And so if you wanted to get into the field, most of what you have to do is, you know, go get a PhD and work in a lab at a university. And for people that are already in business and love their careers, but just want to up level, that's not really what they're looking to do. And so in working with the team at the Human Behavior Lab, we created the certificate. And then I went on to create the book that's helping people in business to know just what they need to know to responsibly apply behavioral economics into their businesses and see really great results without having to, you know, leave their careers to go get a PhD and change everything.
So this book makes behavioral science accessible for, say, the layperson. for an incredibly, I mean, this has got to be one of the cheapest PhDs out there, just a book, which is available on Amazon. And I think it comes with a companion workbook, a free workbook you could download from your site.
Yes, it does. And because I'm very much about making it so people can actually do what I'm talking about here, I want to make it as useful as possible. And really where I would say the, you know, worst thing for me would be for people to buy the book and just have it sit on a shelf and not use it. You know, I really want people to be able to apply and use the information. So I made a 111-page companion workbook, which is all full of different PDFs that you can be looking at going in and applying the concepts that are throughout the book and help you to really use that in your life and business. And so that's all available for anybody to go get for free.
That is incredibly generous. If you go to thebrandybusiness.com and you go to the book, open up the book tab, and you can order the book, which is fantastic, but scroll down and you'll also see get the free companion workbook, which I'm really tempted to download while we're talking, but that seems just a little bit rude. Because I always have a question in there about clothing somewhere, because I've pivoted away from style coaching, but I'll always have a passion for fashion. Anything about behavioral economics and what color to wear when you're talking to a customer? Because I just noticed you have on the most glorious sapphire blue on the photo that you've sent through to me. And blue to me makes you seem approachable. It makes you seem friendly. And of course, the color suits you beautifully. But have you ever explored color?
On color theory, I think it's 61 of the podcast. And in that, there are a couple things which would be, you know, so understanding contrast and how you can stand out against different things. And so, and also in that case, being on brand, like you said, blue is a trustworthy color. But I do a lot of public speaking and, you know, keynotes and things like that. And for myself and for my brand, you know, there are kind of two ways you can go. There's the Steve Jobs approach where you wear the same thing every time, and I could have, you know, logo wear or something, so I always look the same. But I'm one that I'm a fan of the statement piece. And so I, you know, have done Rent the Runway for years as far as when I'm doing speaking engagements. So I can have statement pieces to where people will say, oh no, she was the one in that amazing red dress, or the one with the big flowers on it, that really cool print, whatever that is, to help people to remember me so I can stand out amongst all the other speakers at a particular event. So what I would say, it's about, you know, personal brand choice. And if you are in a space where you need and want to stand out and be remembered out of the crowd, then you need something different and interesting that can help people connect back to you.
Personal branding. You can obviously go to Melina for fashion advice as well. I absolutely agree. I prefer outfits where people can see me from Tacoma. I'd be able to remember me, and a bright, vibrant outfit will exude confidence and power, especially if you've got a yellow or a red, or I love the bold patterns you were talking about. Speaking of Melina as a speaker, I love your sense of humor. Here's one of her topics. Consumers are weird.
Yeah. Yes.
What's that talk about?
So that actually has morphed and modified to be the what your customer wants and can't tell you. But that's the kind of intro to understanding behavioral economics, some top concepts that I think are most important for people in business so they can start applying them right away. But really understanding what people are actually going to do instead of what they think they'll do.
Some of the other great topics are neuromarketing. What a great way to combine words, neuroscience and marketing. Hadn't heard it put like that before, but it's going to be one of my favorites. Change management, and it's not about the cookie, and I don't think she's talking about a chocolate brownie. And then irresistible products. I mean, that talk must be incredibly popular. I don't know of a business out there that doesn't want irresistible products.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to quote the testimonials, totally on point and, surprise, surprise, super funny. I'd love to hear a bit more about some of the fabulous topics in your podcast. I think you did one about reciprocity stories. What's a reciprocity story?
Oh, yeah. So reciprocity is the act of giving and how that has people give back to you. And it's what we would like to think, you know, even that it's you just give back in kind. Actually, people have been shown to give back much more than the value of a gift that they are given. A study for this was on when you go to a restaurant, they give you the check and there happens to be a mint that they drop off at the table with you. You probably wouldn't think that has an impact on how much that you tip. But what this study found was when there was a single mint left, it increased tips by 3%. Which is more than the cost of the mint, definitely worth it for the business. When they did two mints, it didn't just double like you would think. It went up 14%. But that doesn't mean that you want to just leave, you know, a mountain of mints when you are going, you know, if you're working in a restaurant. But instead, they found if you gave one mint and then went to leave and you stop and the waiter said, you know what, for you nice people, here's an extra mint. Tips went up 23%. So that extra little piece of thoughtfulness with the gift made people feel inclined to give back a lot more. And so when you can find things that you can be giving away that creates value for people, it makes it so they want to then give back to you. One of the biggest gifts that I give away from my business is the Brainy Business Podcast. And we talked about the companion workbook, and I do freebie worksheets all the time and share other people's information on social media without asking for things in return. It makes it so people are more likely to recommend me when opportunities come up. They're more likely to consider me when they do need to hire someone in my space. And it just makes it that much easier for people to do business with me.
Not to mention your impressive credentials. Well, I should be getting some bonus points. I'll be interested to see this tiny little science experiment, because I'm about to add your book to a page I just created, which is where I highlight books that my podcast guests have written. And it's a resource page on my website, because I've interviewed amazing women, all of whom have contributed to creating books that will benefit other women and other women entrepreneurs and people in general. And your book is going to be one of those that's going to be featured.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Right back at you. This is fascinating. Ooh, hey, this is a good one. I was talking to female business owners at a networking event last week, and we were talking about pricing strategy. And a lot of the times this has to do with mindset and self-worth. But how would you tie this into behavioral economics? Because I think you did a podcast or an article on that.
Oh, yes. I teach a class on pricing strategy. I have a DIY course that's available on pricing for people that are, you know, entrepreneurs and whatnot. And do a lot around pricing. So when it comes to the confidence piece, it is very much one of the biggest problems for people in business. When we have to set our own prices, it feels very nerve-wracking. It can be stressful to say what the number is. And you often, because you are not your ideal client, you don't need to hire you. So it is likely that it feels like, you know, the value is out of line. And so you may use discounts as a crutch, or you may find yourself saying something like, well, you know, I have this and it's $500. I know that seems like a lot. And, you know, if that's too much for you, I totally get it. You know, I used to only charge $350 for it. So if you want, I could offer it to you for $350, or, you know, maybe if there's something else that you would want to offer, I'm willing to do it, right? You've now have this lack of confidence. You're offering a discount before someone even asked. And the way that you're talking about it is priming someone to feel like there's not a lot of value there. And so those are people that might have said to me, you know, everybody always asks me for a discount. Nobody wants to pay full price. It's about pricing. And I have, you know, episode 5 of the podcast is the truth about pricing. You know, pricing is never about price. That's the thing. There's something you're doing in advance that's either making people feel really great about the price or really bad about it. If instead of that, you know, hesitant type of approach, you know, you're able to say, you know, with confidence that you're offer is at $500. And, you know, most people are really excited about that. We're a herding species, or you can say it's only $500, which is a great value for most everyone I've ever worked with says how much they get, you know, $10,000 worth of value out of it. Would you like to move forward with that today? And then you're just, you stop and you wait for them to talk. Having that confidence, even if internally you're screaming and you feel awful, it is, you have to just have that outward, you say what it is, like it's the time of day or the weather for whatever your pricing is. You need to practice enough that you feel that value and you know it's worth it, so that other people will not kind of hesitate or feel like there's something off.
Absolutely. I often suggest to clients that they record themselves saying it,
mm-hmm.
they practice it over and over, that they play it back, that they write it out as a script, and to just keep quiet can be the hardest thing possible, but do have a pause and always ask for the sale. Just ask for the next right step. Would you like to try it on? Would you prefer this in blue or yellow? When would you like to get started? Would you prefer a Tuesday or a Wednesday? Your client needs that information. It will make them feel better and they'll have more confidence. I basically what Melina just said. Just rewind and listen to Melina.
Well, and don't give too many options. That's another thing that happens. And especially like where you're talking about clothing, right? And saying, well, you could do this, or we could do this size, or it comes in these colors, or that, or this, or pants, or we could do it with this or that. And you want to give everyone everything that they could possibly have. But we actually have, it's a concept called the paradox of choice, where it feels like we want a lot of choices, but when we're given too many, people get into this paralysis. They can't actually make a decision. And so they may say, oh, I'm going to wait till next time. I'm going to think about it, because you just gave them too much. And so it is your job to limit it down to the best choices for someone and to not give more than, you know, three options of things that are comparing to one another. And in other, there are circumstances where you can do more, but in general, like if you were talking about, say, if you're a personal stylist or something, it sounded like maybe some of your listeners are in that realm and you have a couple of different packages that someone can choose from. You don't want more than three options. When you're bringing them clothes to try on, you know, having something set up, they're not having to think about things. You are taking care of all that mental work for them, and they just feel really good in what they are trying on. That all provides additional value, makes them easier for them in that buying choice than if you're asking them to make a bunch of decisions over and over and over again. Our brains get tired very quickly and then don't want to make decisions anymore.
Oh, a decision fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to keep in, you know, is your client hungry, angry, lonely, tired? What, yeah. What's going on in their life? Chances are they've only got 5 minutes. They might be a new mom, which I think you can relate to.
Yes.
They are, and they're tired. So decision fatigue. And we go to people for solutions, whether it's a consultant or a coach or a behavioral economic expert. So offering the best solution for your client is a gift. And yes, simplify it. Make it as simple as possible to help people. I was looking at YouTube, and apparently it is incredibly popular. There's YouTube channels for unboxing videos. And you even wrote about this. Why an unboxing video? Why they're popular? Would you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I did an episode on unboxing videos, as you said, and there are a few one of them being mirror neurons. So if you've ever seen someone get a paper cut,
ow.
I know. And even just thinking about it, you can almost feel it. It's like cringy, right? And that is because of our mirror neurons, to where it's our brain is reacting as if it happens to us. This is why young children, if they watch an adult open a jar, then they can do it themselves without having to be told what to do. We learn by observation and we empathize and feel with others based on these mirror neurons. And so when you are doing an unboxing video, and this is also why it's important to say you subscribe and you click here, you're showing how to click on something. If you are showing off a piece of fabric, you want to be able to talk about how smooth it is or how soft it is or the something else with the texture. giving really good sensory terms like chocolate brown leather instead of just saying it's a leather jacket, right? You want to talk about the smells and how amazing that is, and to have someone be able to see you handling it. Our brains get a hit of dopamine from the anticipation of what's going to be coming out of the box, what that's going to be like with someone else experiencing it. Then we get the joy of those mirror neurons, and it makes it easier for someone to buy and experience when they've seen someone else do it first. So there's a lot going on with unboxing videos. And like we've said, the episode is available on my YouTube channel or at the Brainy Business Podcast to check that out and learn more of the details. I believe it was episode 180 of the Brainy Business.
What a phenomenal memory you have. Really? Wait, Melina can tell you which number her podcast was. I'm just color me impressed. Speaking of sensory, I think I remember seeing a video experiment where random people were handed on the street. They were handed a hot drink or a cold drink, and then somebody would ask them a favor. Like, for example, would you hold this while I do up my shoes? And people were much more likely to say yes if it was a warm drink than it was a cold drink. And I think I saw something that you were talking about, iced coffee.
Yes. So there's a study that was done. I'm not 100% sure on the favors piece, but a study that was done where they had people that were going in to participate in a research study, and they happened to bump into someone who was holding a bunch of papers and things, dropped them, and then said, hey, could you hold this for just a second while I pick these up? And in half of the time, it was iced coffee, half the time hot coffee. And then the people went in and were part of this study that they didn't realize the other person was connected to at all. But what they had to do in that case was to read about a person and then rate their personality on different traits. And those who held the iced coffee in something completely unrelated were more likely to rate the person they read about as being cold, distant, and difficult than those who held the hot coffee. And that is priming in action. Our brains make very literal associations with words and images and other items with our senses, smells, and touch, like on the coffee. And that will impact the future decisions we make. Not forever. It's not like because I drink iced coffee every day, I think everyone is grumpy. But it's more that it can impact just that next choice. So really, as a simple tip too, is, you know, you may feel like you want to look super professional on your website, and so you have pictures of yourself holding a briefcase and wearing a suit. But there are studies that have also found that people were in a room with a briefcase and they were much less likely to cooperate with other people than when they were in a room with a backpack, because of those associations that our brains make. So thinking about everything that could be tied to the images and the words that you're using, and how you could be either priming someone to want to choose you or to turn them off in a way that they can't really say what's wrong, but they're not quite ready to take that next step.
Coming from New Zealand, there is nothing that can't be solved with a hot cup of tea. My motor neurons associate, if anything, if I'm feeling a little wobbly, I will go and find a hot cup of tea and I will hold that hot cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Really are fascinating. Hey, speaking of tea, you've got a whimsical side. You have a shop on your website and I could buy a Be Thoughtful brain mug.
Yeah. Yes, I have a nice shop with lots of Brainy Business swag and, you know, water bottles for the people that like the cold drinks too.
Oh, you've even got a spiral notebook in one of my favorite colors of teal. So where did the artwork come from? I'm seeing these cute little comical brains. I'm seeing little rockets. Where did those come from?
Yeah, the rocket is part of my logo, which my old brand name before I jumped all in with the podcast and everything was called Defying Gravity. And it had a, you know, this kind of spacey theme with it. So we kept the rocket as I transitioned the brand over. And then the purple brain is kind of my mascot. If anybody who connects with me on social media, where you can find me as the Brainy Biz, you'll see I have a lot of images where I'm actually holding a big purple brain. And so he is a part of my brand. I'll talk about how Brain is doing stuff all the time. And so that is where I had then an artist I hired who was a listener of the podcast. And so I asked her to create me some pieces of imagery, including that Be Thoughtful with Brain with his glasses on, and she incorporated the rockets and things. And so that was kind of a fun thing that I have on the different items, like you said, notebooks and mugs and water bottles and hats and things.
And let's face it, when we think of brains, we also think of a rocket scientist, and you have a rocket powering out of a brain. And my husband works at SpaceX, so I think that might end up in his Christmas stocking.
Nice. Love it.
Hey, speaking of how we associate words with things, we have what's called confirmation bias, or what in recovery terms is known as looking for evidence. You can look for false evidence. You have a mindset or a belief, your brain will supply you with evidence to support that belief. What do you mean by confirmation bias?
Well, confirmation bias, and I don't remember the exact episode of that one, so that number is escaping me, but I do have an episode on confirmation bias. And it is something that can make it to where, actually just tying it back to where we were talking about confidence in selling. So if you feel like people are always going to ask you for discounts, and then your brain is filtering the information to show, oh, they kind of looked away while I was talking to them. They must be disinterested. They don't think there's value here. You know, your brain is going to filter to show you things that prove you right, because it likes to be smart and prove itself right all the time. So if instead you look for, you know, I'm worth it. There's a lot of value here. People love to do business with me, and they're getting a great value out of this. And then when, you know, if they look in a different direction, it may not even faze you, or you're thinking, oh, they're looking at that, you know, my great style and how much they want to be like me, or whatever that is, in that moment, to see that it's supporting you instead of going against you. So that is a simple trick where if you do go about, you know, telling yourself the positive things, looking for the good, then you will see more of the good. And if you focus on bad and, you know, negative stuff, I love sarcastic humor myself, but I don't allow any of that to be, you know, on the walls of my office, you know, the another case of the Mondays or TGIF, or, you know, hang in their cat posters or anything, because that can be priming your behavior as you go, and kind of create a really vicious cycle. Whereas instead, if you have, you know, great imagery that is inspiring to you, that's helping you to be moving forward for what you want, you can be reconfirming your goals to yourself and use confirmation bias for good.
Spookily enough, I organize and I host and I teach vision workshops because as somebody who's really visual myself, looking at imagery of where I want to go in life and what I want to have in life, it really helps my focus, and it helps elevate my mood. Same reason I have a wins journal where I write in a great, and where I will write down things that, it doesn't matter how small, but just something that was a success.
Yeah. Love it. Yep. Very, very important. And lots of research has shown that people who have gratitude, that are giving first, that's, I always like, we talked about reciprocity and giving things to other people. It makes it to where people, good things come back to you when you're looking for positives and the things you're grateful for. I know for some people it feels like it's kind of woo-woo or whatever you like to say, but there's a lot of scientific evidence to show that that is absolutely true. So when you look for the good and the positives, you'll see more of them and have, you know, better life, essentially.
I can't think of a better way to end. To talk to the wonderful Melina Palmer, I'm so sorry, the Brainy Business Com would be a great place to start. You can also find her on LinkedIn. Is there any other way you would like people to get in contact with you? I'd say
Yeah. So actually, if anybody wants to go to thebrainybusiness.com/closets, I have the first chapter of my book available for free for all your listeners to go check that out. And you can also find me on social media as The Brainy Biz, B-I-Z.
What a lovely gift. Again, generosity is obviously very much part of who you are. It was such a joy to talk to you today. This is such a fascinating subject. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day, and thank you very much for being here.
Of course. Thank you as well.
Bye.
Bye.